Marketing, event planning, editing, social networking, and much more, all while working directly with producers and the management team. BAI is always taking applications for credit and non-credit internships, so get in touch today. Send an email to internships@wbai.org for more information. Join a team that supplied New York with independent radio for over 50 years. Help keep community radio going strong.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York. It's 8 o'clock on a Wednesday. That means it's time once again for Off the Hook. Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. Joined tonight by Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Kyle.
Hi.
Voltaire.
Hey.
And here we are for another action-packed hour of hacker talk and various other things. This note, we will not be taking phone calls. So don't camp out on the phone lines. We will not be taking phone calls this hour. So there. I said it.
That was really definitive.
Well, I don't want to waste people's time. A lot of people tune in specifically so they can call in. So this way they can go about their business and go outside, do something else maybe, if that is their goal for the night, is to get on the radio on the phone. I've just dashed that hope. Sorry.
So quickly.
Well,
effortless, really.
I got it out of the way.
Yeah.
So there you go. A couple other things I want to get out of the way. Things that I don't like. Well, one thing I really don't like is fake news. I hate fake news. Right? I mean, people hate fake news. It deceives you. It misleads you. It gives you either false hope or false sense of doom. And Wikipedia is doing something about it. Yeah, the founder of Wikipedia says he's on a mission to fight fake news. Jimmy Wales is launching a news platform that is going to bring journalists together with an army of volunteer fact-checkers. And he's calling the site, are you ready? Wiki Tribune. Yeah, Wiki Tribune. And basically, the way it's going to work, they're going to publish news stories written by professional journalists. So that won't change, actual professional journalists writing stories. But in a page borrowed from Wikipedia, Internet users will be able to propose factual corrections and additions. The changes will be reviewed by volunteer fact-checkers. You know, I think Wikipedia works. I was very doubtful of it when I first heard of the concept. But the number of people that are involved, the number of people that have volunteered their time to get facts right, you might get something profoundly wrong for a short period of time, but it's very quickly corrected. Go ahead and you know, say that Manhattan is the biggest city in North Dakota, and you'll see how quickly that gets taken down, a matter of seconds. I don't know how they do it. I've never done it myself, but it works. It really does work. So I'm optimistic about this. What do you think, Rob?
I'm interested. I mean, I'm a Wikipedia user and contributor for a long time, and
One thing I deeply respect about Wikipedia is the way that it does work, and the power of the citation needed tag when something particularly questionable shows up.
Yes.
And applying that to a news outlet, I think I've read and watched and listened to many news stories at which I've screamed back citation needed, and now we can do something like that.
And you know, it's done in a way, or at least I hope it'll be done in a way that's not like comment boards, where everybody seems to think they can just spout off anything they believe in and make it count equally towards the article, which was written by somebody who did the research and knows something about the subject. So it'll be nice to have that going on in the background, having it approved and whatever. But if something is factually incorrect, it'll be caught. It'll be fixed. Walter.
Yeah, Wikipedia, an organization of Wikimedia, already has a news, something like Wikipedia for news called Wikinews.
Yeah, I was wondering actually, about that. What's
the
difference?
It does a decent job. It has a decent breadth, but it's, what's interesting here is that they're admitting that news isn't the type of thing that you can, especially investigative journalism, that you can just have editors do for free. It's something that you actually need to pay for. Like, investigative journalism is really expensive, and that's what's interesting here.
Yeah, and that's what, a lot of people don't seem to get that. Yeah, you do have to pay people to do this right, and the content needs to be paid for in some way. I have to say, though, the way it's done now on the web is insane. If you do take out a subscription to the New York Times, which I'd recommend, it doesn't help you reading the LA Times or the Washington Post or even Newsday. You know, there's all kinds of different outlets out there. And if you go to Google News, you'll be hit with all of them, and they all have their handout. There is no one particular way to, say, pay a set fee and subscribe to all the ones that are of a particular class of service. It would be nice if that existed. Because, you know, I want to support these outlets, the ones that actually put time into writing news stories. But it's annoying when you support one and it doesn't count for anything when you go to another story someplace else. Sometimes it's even linked to from the first one. There's only so many things you can support. So it would be nice if there was something kind of that covered the minimal amount. And I think it would be more successful.
Yeah, I've played a little bit with Wiki News in the past. It as you said, it's generated entirely by the community, which can be interesting, but mostly it ends up sort of a weird blend by consensus thing. Whereas the difference with Wiki Tribune seems to be that they're going to have a staff of professionals generating the stories, and everyone else is basically going to be helping them along and fact checking them and stuff. It's as if the New York Times or something like that put a new story out there, but then enabled those who can back up their sources to add to the article and correct things.
Exactly. Yes. I'm not sure though from this if they're going to have people who are Wiki Tribune employees doing this, or if they're going to be using an existing pool of professional journalists and putting it on the Wiki Tribune site. I guess that's something we'll find out when it launches. Do we know when this is going to launch?
Is it about a month? I think.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's good to know. And it's high time we could use something like this. Yes.
Also, interesting, like Wikipedia, the content will be freely licensed, so it's going to be a Creative Commons Attribution License, which means you'll be free to redistribute it.
Yeah, well, you know, the way I look upon it, if it's on the web, you can distribute it. If it's you know, a news story that is out there, you can read it on the air, you can print it, you can share it, and that's why it's there. That's why it's on the web. It's publicly accessible.
It's worth noting that, as Voltaire said, this hasn't gone well, or it's been something that they've tried in the past, but hasn't taken off quite as much. It was Wikinews, it's sort of sparsely populated with stuff. It's not as comprehensive as something like Google News, and it's not a foregone conclusion that this will work.
Mm-hmm.
This is an additional attempt, and in this climate, could be something that Wikipedia could bring a lot of value to, in their ability to have people curate it in the way that other parts of Wikipedia is curated.
Well, now, speaking of fake news, brings me, of course, to Facebook. I was on Facebook a couple days. I don't go on Facebook very often. It's annoying. I don't like the interface. I don't like the people, honestly. I don't like people on Facebook. It's a fact. They just, for some reason, people I get along with in real life, they annoy me on Facebook. I don't know why that is. So I avoid it at all costs. And occasionally, though, I just check in to see what's going on, catch up, I'm bored. And the first thing I saw was this news story that, you know, the guy that plays Newman on Seinfeld had died. And I was really sad by this. It turns out it's fake news. This news story right there, first thing I see when I log into Facebook is that Wayne Knight has died. And, like, you know, it took me about 10 minutes to realize, hey, that didn't really happen because I was on Wikipedia, of all things, and there wasn't, you know, a date of death listed. Now, imagine that, you know. And the thing, it stays on Facebook. It's always there. I don't know who puts out these things. And I've heard many people complaining about fake news on Facebook. I just didn't know it was that much in your face, where something that was blatantly false is just there, seeming to be real. And, you know, maybe you click on it, maybe you don't. But if you don't click on it, it stays in your head. And it's really, it runs against the spirit of everything that we should be doing, spreading fake information. And if this is the kind of thing that has been going on throughout the election, if this is how people have been getting their facts, their quote-unquote facts, then, wow, that explains an awful lot. It really does. So there was no way for me to get rid of this. It was just there. I'm sure that there's all kinds of conversations going on where people believe this, and it gets spread. Fake news gets spread. That's one problem with Facebook. But, you know, another problem, like I said, the people who are on Facebook. I just got this story today. This came in my Google News feed. What to do if your Facebook has been hacked? And I'm sorry, there's just something so funny about that title in and of itself. What to do if your Facebook has been hacked? First of all, that phrase years ago would make people just bust out laughing, because who cares if Facebook got hacked? But here's the story. It comes from an organization called Newswire.net. There is no way that you would ever think that it would happen to you. But sadly, it happens every day to hundreds or even thousands of accounts. And the race for the Pulitzer is on. Finding your Facebook has been hacked is a scary and confusing event. Really? A scary and confusing event? Wow, okay. A mild annoyance is how I would phrase it, but scary and confusing? Okay. One in which you must act quickly to minimize damage done to your personal information and possibly to your friends. Finding out that your Facebook has been hacked means that you potentially have lost sensitive personal and even financial information to the hackers who have hijacked your account. Who puts financial information on their Facebook account? I guess there are people who do this. I can't conceive of why.
Me either.
Can anybody, Voltaire, can you conceive of this?
They tried doing micro purchases before, but the initiative didn't really take off, and I don't know if they even still offer it.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, you wouldn't put your bank info on there, would you? Or
they don't have, like, a Facebook currency, do they?
I hope not, but this is a good reason why they shouldn't.
They've tried that, too.
Most of us use our accounts over a long amount of time, and it reflects in this here. And although we are careful in what information is shared through the social media platform, doesn't sound like you're careful to me, but okay, fine. At times of hurried communication, we might often share a little more than is safe for us, too. There's so much wrong with this story, so much wrong. we won't have time to get into it all. Addresses, telephone numbers, passwords, credit card details, passports, or IDs, so much, this is a sentence, or IDs, so much can be available for a hacker to harvest from your hacked account. I don't even know what that sentence is trying to say, but I'm getting in there that people post their passports to Facebook and their credit card details. It makes no sense to me. Without realizing, we can give out details and private information which we consider safe because only our friends can see it, friends in quotes. When a hacker enters your world and can see what only you see, things become a lot more dangerous. Well, listen to this. Anybody who accesses your Facebook account can see what you can see, obviously, but why in God's name are you putting things on there that can hurt you? It makes no sense to me at all. You know, I use Facebook for communication occasionally, but why would you put your passport on there? Why would you put your credit card on there? Why would you put other passwords on there? Makes no sense, Rob.
Yeah, I don't use Facebook myself, but if I did, this is still stuff that I wouldn't trust Facebook themselves with, let alone anybody who had access to my Facebook.
Absolutely, and that's who you would be trusting. You would be trusting Facebook with it. You're giving all this information.
I'm curious. Are they offering something like a cloud storage service where people would be assuming that their files and data is safe in some kind of thing like akin to a Google
you
Drive?
You mean here, what I'm reading? Are they offering? Is
I'm
that
curious if Facebook offers something and the article's implying that that service is potentially where people would keep information like a scan of a passport or something.
Well,
like.
Let's get back on the ride and see where this article takes us. In the occurrence that your Facebook has been hacked.
In the occurrence that your
Facebook... this is... I'm an English major, and this is just hurting. I'm getting internal pain reading this. In the occurrence that your Facebook has been hacked, there is no time to waste. You should gain back... No, it's still the same sentence, so that's why I kept going. There is no time to waste. You should gain back control of your account immediately. That's the wrong place to put the comma, but whatever.
There's no time to waste to gain your
account. Every minute the hacker is in possession of your personal information means that you might be further... Wait a minute, there's a comma there? Every time the hacker is in possession of your personal information, comma, means that you might be further in danger of losing your personal information. I just want to think maybe somebody hacked this story and inserted all kinds of commas where they shouldn't be. Anyway, not to ridicule too much, because there's other things to ridicule. Steps you should take if your Facebook has been hacked. You know, the right way to say this, folks, your Facebook account, all right? Don't refer to it as your Facebook. I don't know, something about that that just bothers me.
Well, because Facebook has accounts that are a part of the greater whole of Facebook. There aren't individual Facebooks.
Yeah, you don't talk about...
one Facebook.
You don't talk about your Yahoo, your Hotmail,
yeah.
Your Google, your Gmail, rather, you know?
You do say Gmail, but that's a service.
No, you don't say someone hacked my Gmail account.
Yeah, you know, actually, I stand corrected. You're right.
Yeah.
They would say the account.
Anyway, here are the steps. Regain control of your account. Okay, that's a good step right there. First bit of useful information. Chances are that you will receive an email notification if a new or unusual log in has happened to your account if you have this awesome feature turned on your Facebook account. So please do make sure that you receive email notifications for your account, unless you're a dumbass and your email account has also been hacked. Access the damage. Okay, I think what you mean to say is assess the damage. Oh, boy. Take a look at what information was available in your account, then act accordingly. If you have any credit card details, better cancel the card and order a new one. If you have ID information or Social Security, report the hack to the police. Yeah, because the police have nothing better to do than to deal with idiots who use lame-ass Facebook passwords and have their accounts hijacked. Yeah, call 911 for that. They'll be thrilled to hear from you. Aye. Number three, inform your friends. They'll love it. It's best to post a general notice on your wall that your Facebook has been hacked in order for your friends to not fall victim to any scams or malware that might have been placed by the hacker. Yeah, because that's what we do. We go into your Facebook, and then we place malware and all kinds of horrible things in there and send it to your friends so that we can victimize them as well. It's a real good business we got going here. Often they will receive a link and message from who they think is you, so they trust that it's legitimate. The link may contain malware or a fake page asking for personal or login information. I wish this was a fake page, but it's not. It's a real page. And four, report and then delete. Report all hacking attempts and actual hacks directly to Facebook. It's your duty, not only for your rights, but for others who might fall victim to a hacker. Report the incident, and then make sure to delete anything posted or shared during the time that the hacker has control of your account. It's better to be safe than sorry. You know, if it's better to be safe than sorry, we wouldn't have to read this whole article in the first place. You know, you would have been safe from the start, and you wouldn't have left the door wide open so people can take advantage of your naivete. Anyway, let's finish this article so we can move on. There is so much you can do to protect your account, but hackers are always fighting for a way to break in. From Facebook gamers to people who share the information via quizzes? What does that mean? They share the information via quizzes. And what's a Facebook gamer? Is that that stupid farm app? Is that a Facebook gamer? They spend their time doing that?
Farmville.
Okay, you know what? If you're victimized by a Farmville player, I don't think it gets much lower than that. I just pissed off the Farmville gamers.
Farmers.
Come and get us. We're right here. You're opening yourself up to hacking or malware attempts. Make sure that you have a strong password. We're like 8 paragraphs in before that little hint is given out. That is never stored anywhere that can be accessed online. Then they use the word access instead of accessed when they should have used access. Wow. And never accept friend requests or messages from people you don't know.
I never do that.
Yeah, don't ever talk to strangers because they're always evil. Yeah. So, yeah, that's good to keep that going.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know, I'm sorry if I was overly harsh on this article, but, boy, it could have used an editor. It could have used some professional oversight here. It comes from a site called newswire.net. And apparently you can subscribe to this site and pay them money so you can write news stories and get them sent out via Google to people who will then click on them and believe that they're real. And, you know, in this case, the article itself is real. It's just very poorly written. But this is how it works now. You pay a company so that you can send out either a press release or a news story. Then Google will send it to everybody, and you will read that. And that's how journalism has degraded to this point. It's really kind of sad.
Either that or they're writing with anticipation that their work will be dismissed as fake out of hand, so why even try?
And apparently they pay this company to do this, too, which is really kind of unbelievable. Voltaire.
I think even worse than this article's writing style is they didn't even have the actual one piece of technical advice for how to secure your Facebook, which is to turn on two-factor authentication. And that means that instead of having just a password that anybody can...
Do you really think they could understand the concept of two-factor authentication?
No, but I think our listeners should. Just go to your Facebook setting, and next time that you want to log into Facebook, you have to, in addition to submitting your password, they'll text you if you give them your phone number, or enter an have an authentication app on your phone, and it'll provide a one-time code. And
of course, us hackers will figure out a way around that too, just to keep that writer, in panic of hackers. But yeah, it's orders of magnitude more secure, Rob.
I suspect that this site purposely posted this article in hopes that maybe someone who's a professional editor by trade who also has a radio show will critique it and do the editing work for them for free. So you're playing right into their hands, Emmanuel.
No, I'd have to pay. It's not free. It's a thing. You have to pay to join this. Okay, here's what they say. Become a writer. Newswire is a social media site for writers. By contributing to Newswire, you gain credibility. Try again. Get published and make some money. You can make money, too. Okay, now I'm listening. You have the ability to make a difference without asking permission from traditional sites. As the largest and fastest growing citizen journalist site in the world, Newswire allows you to create a portfolio while sharing your messages with the world. Wow. And this is riddled with all kinds of typos as well. I can't even begin to get into that. Yes, we need this Wiki Journal ASAP. We need
Tribune.
We need Wiki Tribune. I'm sorry, I'll get the name right when it becomes established.
That's I'm here to help.
Yes. All right. Fun things coming. 1984 is coming to the Hudson Theater in Broadway.
I've heard about this.
Yeah, starting on looks like May 18th.
It was originally a London production.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember what their theater district's called, but it has
the West End
moved its way. Yeah, the West End. There you go. It has moved from the UK, and it is going to have its debut here in New York City, and. So that's going to be taking place very soon, I believe in the month of May.
Yes.
For 2 to 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks at the Hudson Theater. I think you already said that.
Yes. So just look that up online, and 1984, the George Orwell classic.
Yes, it's by George Orwell, and it's about a surveillance state.
Uh-huh. It's musical, right? Is it a musical? Oh, no, it's not a musical.
It's a dramatic production.
I'm sorry, dramatic production. Okay.
And here it says it's... a chilling, ingenious 101 minutes of theater.
Okay.
The London
Wait a minute. It's a live production. Do they got a? Yeah, they have a timer going. Come on. Come on, Winston. Hurry up already. You're lagging.
Right.
We got to be out of here by 10.
Why 101 minutes?
Because room 101. That's why. Hey, that's actually genius.
Okay. Okay.
I don't know if they thought that, but now they can say they did.
That's probably why.
Wow.
And I've revealed myself to be ignorant of the story.
Or I've revealed myself to be very smart. Either one.
I didn't get that reference at all, but I still have the paper, so I can at least pretend to be intelligent.
Yes, yes. That's what it's all about here. Okay, and we have some more news to pass along, some more interesting items that are either serious or ridiculous. The teenager who created the Titanium Stressor Program, do you guys remember this? The Titanium Stressor Program?
What?
Yeah, he has been sentenced to 2 years in jail. Because
serves him right.
between late 2013 and early 2015, there were a number of distributed denial of service attacks carried out against various game servers and websites. And now the hacker that created the software responsible for those attacks has been sentenced to 2 years behind bars. Hackers carried out over 1.7 million attacks using the Titanium Stressor Program created by 20-year-old Adam Mudd. His name literally is Mudd. Wow. The attacks targeted networks including Xbox Live, TeamSpeak, and others, as well as, God forbid, Minecraft. He was also personally responsible for 594 DDoS attacks against 181 IP addresses between December 2013 and March 2015. Mudd also sold the program to other hackers, earning nearly $500,000 in cash and Bitcoin. Okay, wow. Well, that's different, earning that much money from that kind of a utility. He pled guilty to the charges, also admitted to breaching the security of West Hertz College. The judge noted that the crimes in question had repercussions from Greenland to New Zealand. I challenge anybody in Greenland who was affected by this. There probably is somebody, some gamer there. From Russia to Chile, and said that for the sentence he handed down, he said the sentence that he handed down would need to have a real element of deterrent. According to The Guardian, Mudd showed no emotion at the verdict. You know, okay, I take exception to making $500,000, selling this kind of a tool in the first place, but really, jail for disrupting some gamers and doing denial of service attacks? We have denial of service attacks all the time, and no one ever comes to us and says, hey, you know what? If we catch the guy, we'll put him in jail. All they ever tell us is, we can't figure out where it's coming from. There's nothing you can do, but you can subscribe to our service and pay us a huge amount of money, and we might be able to do something in the future. You know, kind of like the mob. That's what we're faced with, but apparently the bigger companies, if you attack them, they get to put somebody in jail. It just doesn't seem like an even playing field.
I'm confused about an element of this story. Did this person actually personally set off the attacks, or did he just make the tool that other people used?
Well, they say he wrote the Titanium Stressor, but he also personally was responsible for a couple of the DDoS attacks, 594 of them. So, yeah, he was busy, too. I guess he had to test it, right, make sure it works.
Sure.
We're better off finding ways to mitigate these things, to have them not be so effective, to work out, you know, sending somebody to jail. Okay, you get rid of one person. The tool is still out there, and someone's going to write a better tool, you know, and do something else. It strikes me as a stupid way to deal with the problem.
I don't know. I'm thinking now of pressing charges against my sister for all the years she used to unplug the controller to the Nintendo when I was
there
playing.
There you go. That's the same thing, right?
It's true that this is absurd in the sense that you'd be judging a gaming network to be equivalent to something that is critical infrastructure that does have repercussions like this. You're applying that same idea and perspective to what is ostensibly something for recreation.
Yes. Yes. Walter.
I think the jail sentence is a bit harsh, but I don't think it's something that we should just let.
No, I think any jail sentence is a bit harsh. Why are we imprisoning people that are intelligent, that can program? And yeah, okay, got up to a bit of mischief. You know what? You wanna punish him, make him give back the money or something. Okay, that's punishment. Imprisoning somebody.
Community service.
Yeah, I mean, are we really safer having this guy in jail? He made $500,000. You know what? Build a bridge or something. There, that's your sentence.
Yeah, unfortunately, the rationale is that we would be supporting someone who was disrupting the normal course of these gaming companies' business.
You know, where I come from, disrupting is a good thing, all right? And if you can figure out how to disrupt, you're onto something. Maybe we should be listening.
It is frustrating, though, if you're wanting to just relax when you get home from work.
It's frustrating. Lots of things are frustrating. When the hot water doesn't work, that's frustrating. I don't want to, you know, lock up the people in Con Ed. I do, but that's a whole other issue.
The companies themselves ostensibly benefited from the knowledge of this exploit and improved their networks. We can only imagine since then to be more robust and resilient to an attack like this.
Do you think they've improved, or they think they're just threatening people with jail, you know, and think that's the improvement?
It seems like they're doing a little of both.
All right. Well, I want to move on to this this other story, too. And the only reason I want to move on to this is to give – what's the opposite of a shout-out? Shout down? Shout at? no, that's
see.
that's the same thing.
Shout out. I think it would be one of the seven deadly words.
I can't say that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this news site is called newsx.com. And the reason I want to shout at them is because I made the mistake of trying to print this this story about Indian hackers that are crippling more than 500 Pakistani government websites to avenge this guy's penalty, this guy named Jadhav. And when you print it out, they print 20 pages of gibberish. The print dialogue comes up. They have a little icon. I trusted it. Didn't get the preview. Figured it would just print the story. Not only does it print text over the story of the part you can read, it prints a whole bunch of more pages. There were so many sites that do this. Yeah. But this site in particular, try it out for yourself if you don't care about trees. Newsx.com. I have no idea who they are, but another Google News winner here. Digitization in the nation has now gone up to the next level altogether. Nowadays, apart from just using internet to be connected to one another, people are now using it as a tool to avenge certain actions. A few days ago, some digital warriors from India crippled numerous government websites of Pakistan as a counter against the country's announcement of the death penalty to former Navy officer Kulbushan Jadhav, accusing him of espionage, taking out a digital surgical strike. I love when they use military terms for digital things. Indian hackers got their hands on at least 30 Pakistani government websites. The hacking was taken out against the death penalty rewarded to Jadhav. He was accused of spreading sabotage activities in Karachi and Balochistan. A message on a hacked Pakistani website read, "Charges against Kulbushan Jadhav are fictitious, fake, and farcical. There is no evidence of wrongdoing by him. This is an act of premeditated murder. Earlier it was Sarabjit, now it's Jadhav." I would tell you who Sarabjit was, but that part has been typed over by their wonderful printing utility. But yeah, okay, that was another example of some hacking gone wrong. And finally, this story here about smart TVs. We all know and love smart TVs, and how they can now be hacked in totally different ways. It's a new hack, or a new attack rather, that uses terrestrial radio signals to hack a wide range of smart TVs. And that raises an unsettling prospect. The ability of hackers to take complete control of a large number of TV sets at once without having physical access to any of them. In the past, we've talked about this, but you've usually had to have physical access. The proof of concept exploit uses a low-cost transmitter to embed malicious commands into a rogue TV signal, and that signal is then broadcast to nearby devices. It worked against two fully updated TV models made by Samsung by exploiting two known security flaws in the web browsers running in the background, because all TVs have to have web browsers. The attack was able to gain highly privileged root access to the TVs. Highly privileged root access to the TVs. By revising the attack to target similar browser bugs found in other sets, the technique would likely work on a much wider range of TVs. Now, once a hacker has control over the TV of an end user, he can harm the user in a variety of ways. No, not physical harm, but annoyances. Among other things, the TV could be used to further attack other devices in the home network. If, say, your dishwasher is on the network as well, yes, they might have access to that.
Well, it's true. I mean, you would have access, a very low-level access, to what is ostensibly a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll only use ostensibly one more time tonight, but you're really...
Well, you just did.
Oh, man.
Yes, you can't use it anymore. But also, they can use the TV to spy on the user with the camera and microphone that's embedded inside the TV set. You really have to take a good look at what we're putting in our homes and the worst possible outcomes, because those worst possible outcomes will happen. Voltaire.
I think it's worth pointing out here that consumers don't really have a choice when it comes to smart TVs. Like, literally, they don't sell non-smart
TVs. They choose not to get one. They're not so smart, you know, just like smartphones might not be so smart.
The only non-smart TVs they sell are very low-end ones, so if you want a high-performing TV, you have to get one. And the reason why they do this is not because consumers are asking for it or because they want it. It's because this buying mechanism that we mentioned, they can sell consumers' data for ad money, so they can make more money off you.
Well, you know what? I think a TV company out there can make a lot of money by selling a dumb TV set that just receives signals and nothing else, and they promise we're not going to spy on you. Rob?
I was always fascinated with the hack, the type of hack known as broadcast signal intrusion, where somebody would take over the TV signal, and you see this a lot in like fictional movies and stuff. But every so often, someone managed to pull it off. There was the old Captain Midnight hack on Showtime back.
Remember
in the
80s. That? Yeah.
The Max Headroom.
Actually, that was HBO,
in,
I think.
Oh, HBO. Yes. You're right. But there was a Max Headroom incident where somebody broadcast their own Max Headroom performance over an episode of Doctor Who. And this kind of stuff is really fascinating, but usually you would have to overpower a commercial TV station's signal somehow, which is very, very difficult. But if you could just go out into some area, you know, broadcast something you want and, like, do what you want, broadcast what you want on everyone's television in mm-hmm. the area, that's a whole other way to look at this.
Yeah, micro-broadcasting, taken to the extreme. Okay, it's mailbag time, and we've been getting a lot of mail lately, so I want to go through as much of it as we possibly can. You can write to us to OTH at 2600.com. That's OTH at 2600.com. Oh, yes, and before we delve into this, Voltaire, we have an update on our social media Twitter account. What is it, Hacker Radio Show?
Yes, at Hacker Radio Show.
At Hacker Radio Show. And we're asking people to ask questions of us on the air tonight. Is
yep.
that what we're doing?
We won't be taking calls, but if you have any questions or comments about
no,
that
as
story.
I said at the beginning of the show, we will not be taking phone calls. So, yes, send us a message this way through Twitter. Figure it out. Just direct message us or tweet to us or something, and you'll be able to read it, right?
Correct.
Okay, because I'm too busy here with all the paperwork. Hacker at Hacker Radio Show. Of course, the at is assumed.
Yes.
Everybody on Twitter has an at sign. Okay, here's our first letter. It starts, Dear Hacker. I like letters that start, Dear Hacker. I was just wondering if I should have received my premium yet from the latest WBAI fund drive. I pledged for the 2016 Hope USB stick, and I paid through the WBAI website at the time of pledging. Sorry if I'm mistaken, and you were still putting those premiums together. I thought you mentioned sending them out during a show about a month ago. And this is from Tom. He also says, thank you for many years of excellent radio. I've been a listener now for going on 20 years. I am getting old. Well, Tom, no, you are not mistaken. We did mention about a month ago that we were catching up to our other premiums. We got all those out, including Rob's paintings. And now I'm happy to say we've caught up to the premiums from the last fund drive, the winter fund drive of this year, believe it or not. And they are actually being sent out this week. And that includes the thumb drives, the DVD sets, and the books, the Kevin Mitnick books. So you might have gotten it already, or if you have not, you should get it within the next week. And guess what? Next week, the spring fundraiser begins here at WBAI. So we have that to look forward to.
But very happily, we'll be starting it completely caught up on our premiums.
And that hasn't happened literally in years. So we're very happy about this. We've had increased cooperation with everybody here at the radio station. And I have to say, we've never been this organized. So hopefully that lasts. Hopefully we can stay up to date on everything. But we're very happy to get this done. Okay, next letter. Hey guys, I was walking around my college campus and discovered there is a public free landline phone that still has a dial tone. I'm not really good with payphones as they were being phased out just as I was getting into technology. Not really good with payphones. Wow. Yeah, that's a thing. But I know you guys used to do a bit, an understatement I know, of fracking stuff. That's mixing, freaking, and hacking. So my question is this. Is there anything I can do to get more info about this phone and the line that it's on? Numbers I can dial. Maybe get the number of the phone. It may be a private network, as it says, for on-campus calls only, but there's no listing of internal numbers to call, so... Maybe it can reach external numbers. I'm fascinated by these things, but I have no idea where to start. Thanks for any help. And that's from Phil. Phil, thank you for your letter and for the trip down memory lane where these things were common. It's not a payphone, obviously, if it's for on-campus calls only. It sounds like what you got there is some kind of a free type of hotline phone. Maybe they forgot about it. They're not telling you what you can call. But I imagine any on-campus extension, you'd be able to dial from that, and it's not a payphone, it wouldn't cost you anything. And these things are actually quite handy. In fact, I think college campuses still have them, right? They haven't phased these out.
The best way to know is to try different things. Try calling
yeah.
yourself, try calling in known extensions on the,
well, okay,
the network.
But how would he try calling himself? I would say dial 9, see if you get another dial tone.
Right.
I doubt they just left it there where you can make outgoing calls, but maybe they have. It's quite possible. Try everything. But if you know of an on-campus extension, it's probably the last 4 or last 5 digits of the actual phone number, try that. Dial 0.
Yeah.
See what operator answers. Ask her for dialing instructions or him. And that's how you learn. Just feel free to stand there in the cold in the middle of wherever this phone happens to be and experiment to your heart's content well into the early morning hours. That's what we've all done, and it's nothing beats that. Nothing beats that at all. Rob?
You may not be able to call outside lines just by phone number, but in the case where you can call toll-free numbers, which might be the case depending on how this is set up, there is one that I've been using for decades, and it still works.
Okay.
And I most recently tried it the other day when this
giving out phone numbers on the air. Okay, let's do this.
Yeah, I'm going to do this because it's terribly fun to play with. 1-800-444-4444.
That's MCI.
That's MCI.
I have a database in my head.
Yes.
So that if you tell me a phone number, I can instantly recall it. And you know, we used to use that phone number to get our phone number back.
Yes.
I don't know if that still works that way.
It does still work that way.
Really?
I've recently tested it. It still says it's at MCI, and it will read you back the number you're calling from. If you ever are presented with a telephone you'd like to know more about, you'd like to know the phone number of it, dial 1-800 and all fours, at least within America, and it should choke back the number at you.
Excuse me.
I thought we weren't having phones tonight.
No, I didn't say incoming calls. 800?
1-800, yes.
Let's see what happens.
Thank you for calling MCI. Our system indicates you are calling from 347-335-0818. If this is the number you are calling about, press 1. If not, please listen to the following...
Okay, enough of that. But wow, that was a good guess. That is our phone number.
Yes, indeed.
Which we are not taking phone calls on tonight.
Yeah, you can't call it. I mean, you can call it, but you're not going to get anywhere.
Thanks for that handy tip, Rob. And maybe we should make this a feature of the show. One number per week.
I don't know. If we get our own ANI every show, it'll start to get repetitive.
Well, it doesn't have to be that kind of a number. But, you know, going through the old issues of 2600 as we digitize them, we see people writing in constantly with all kinds of phone numbers and getting really excited by them. And, you know, you should be excited by these things because they're interesting. They really are. Here's a letter about Fire Island phones. I asked around. You can still get copper wire phone service on Fire Island. However, I was told that it's cheaper to get Fios Internet if you get it packaged with Internet phone. Verizon will charge you more to run Internet than it will to run Internet with phone service. And I was told the reason behind the push to get rid of copper had to do with problems with credit card machines being unreliable out there. So, Rupert, for that bit of information. I'm not sure how true what Verizon says actually is, but it might very well be. What else we have here? I just finished listening to last week's show and would like to comment about the funny insurance company commercials. I don't think that they truly understand the impact of what they are trying to portray. For them to think that accidents are an everyday occurrence and have some comic element about them is disgusting on their part. Couldn't agree more. 9 years ago, I lost my family to an ignorant driver who wasn't paying attention to what she was doing. I was the only one of us who walked away without any physical harm. My wife and 3 sons were already gone before I could get to that wreck. My God. And for the insurance companies to call it an accident is just a way for that driver to not claim ownership of what she had done. The word accident really needs to be replaced with incident because that's what it truly is. That's my feeling about how insurance companies portray themselves. Just disgusting. Signed, Christopher. And Christopher, our deepest condolences for what you had to go through there, and very good points. Christopher also writes in with a suggestion for a name for our next conference, which is our 12th conference. Our conferences are known as HOPE, Hackers on Planet Earth, and we're looking for a good name for the next one. The previous one was called the 11th HOPE, and we don't want to call the next one the 12th HOPE because that's just not imaginative, and HOPE 12 is right out as well. Christopher's suggestion is HOPE 00110001001001010. Much as that rolls off the tongue, I don't know if we'll get many people to inject that into conversation. And you'd be surprised, actually. You're not the only person who suggested that. But thank you. Thank you for that. Wow. That is something. Here's another from Larry, who suggests. Okay, this is kind of interesting, and it's going to open up a whole range of conversations here. A name suggestion for the 12th HOPE conference I could catch on. Actually, there's no suggestion here. It basically refers us to a sublime number. Apparently, 12 is a sublime number. Now, a sublime number is a positive integer which has a perfect number of positive divisors. Divisors? Is that how you say it?
Yes.
Okay, I wasn't paying attention in math. Whose positive divisors add up to another perfect number. So the number 12, for example, is a sublime number. It has a perfect number of positive divisors, and the sum of these is, again, a perfect number. 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 6 plus 12 equals 28. There are only this blew my mind here. There are only two known sublime numbers, 12 and a number I can't say because it's 2 to the 126 multiplied by 2 to the 61st minus 1. I can't even say that. But it has 76 decimal digits. And apparently nobody has found a third one. So, okay, you know what? Larry, 12 really is a unique number based on that, but how in God's name do we express this? Sublime hope, I guess. Yeah, is that what your suggestion was? Sublime hope?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not bad.
That's not bad.
That's
I like that.
Actually pretty close to some of the better ones that we've heard.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll keep that one in mind for sure. Here's another one, and we've sure got a lot of these. Thank you for broadcasting a little hope into our lives every week with your wonderful radio show. Isn't that nice? And not just when we play hope excerpts, but
I have
actually
a feeling there's a but.
No, there's no but here. There's,
okay, okay.
There's an as.
We'll take that too.
As for the 2018 Hope Conference, I think that it should be named the Abundant Hope or Hope Abundant. Because guess what? 12 is the first abundant number. Oh, my God. That's an abundant number, too. And by 2018, we will all be filled with an abundance of hope that we can manage to continue to survive for two more years. Or we'll never get there, in which case it doesn't really matter. Okay, what's an abundant number? Here we go. In number theory, an abundant number or excessive number, that one I can get behind, is a number for which the sum of its proper divisors is greater than the number itself. The integer 12 is the first abundant number. Its proper divisors are 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6 for a total of 16. The amount by which the sum exceeds the number is the abundance. The number 12 has an abundance of 4, for example. Bryce, thank you for this. Thank you for giving our brain something else to chew on. Wow. Okay, is any other special attributes about the number 12? Because it's really getting tiresome here.
Actually, I'm not convinced there's an abundance of hackers. You know, I mean,
is that going to be our theme?
Maybe by then.
These are good suggestions,
they're
though.
They're great suggestions.
I like these.
I'm just saying, if we are misleading in that we imply there's an abundance of hackers on planet Earth,
mm-hmm.
can we, I mean, we need to have everybody out there to really contribute. We don't want to be made out to mislead or say that there is something that there isn't. So we need that show of support from hackers.
What's good about
it's
calling
going to
it,
be in abundance.
Yeah, what's calling it sublime or abundant is that there are people out there who will get it,
mm-hmm.
even though we won't go out of our way to say it. So they'll know how smart we are or how smart the people who suggested this to us are. We have to erase this show so that they think it was our idea.
Well, regardless of the name, we could still use an abundance of hackers.
Okay. One more. This is from Alan. I suggest the name the Year of Hope as this being the 12th Hope and 12 months in a year. 12 months in a year. Okay.
So
It doesn't really say it that much, though. But the 12 months of hope, but then that implies each conference is a month. The 12 hopes of, I don't know, something, the 12 days of Christmas, you know, that thing. And we could sort of latch onto that and do something fun, maybe.
Yeah, I like this general direction, the time of hope, because obviously it occurs at a specific time. All of those things are very good,
uh-huh.
the relevance of the 12 months in a year. But it's in that vein of another one I had thought of was the age of hope. And on and on, like there's different avenues you could go down with that, but these are all very good because they tie together that the length of time periods of.
12 is a really wacky number.
It's funny, yeah. It's used in a lot of interesting.
12 months, 12 hours. You know, it's we already used a clock theme, but still, it's and of course it's abundant and excessive and. and 12, Sublime and all that.
12 inches in the Imperial system.
That's right, 12 inches and a foot.
I didn't want to be the one to say it, but...
A foot of hope.
Okay.
Oh, there you go, a foot of hope.
Oh, that's new, that's
I don't know
good.
What that means.
Okay.
It sounds really silly.
Yeah.
A hope foot.
A hope foot.
A foot of... Yeah, okay.
Is that like a mythological being, like Bigfoot?
Hey, guess what, folks? I lied. We are taking phone calls tonight. The reason I lied... No, the reason I lied was because there are people who tune in at the beginning of the show... And they camp on the phone lines, and all they want to do is be, you know, a caller. And we wanted those people to go out and have fun. And the people that actually did their time and listened to the whole show, you guys can call 347-335-0818 and say whatever you want to say on the radio in the 5 or so minutes we have left. But here we have one more suggestion from Rick from Shanghai, who suggests Hope 1-2, like Hope 1 also. Wontoo.
Hope 1-2. I did like this one. It implied.
Wait a minute.
The Go election ahead. Results were a win for hackers.
Okay.
So Hope 1, Won 2.
Yeah,
another
but,
one I just
but,
thought of with the feet reference or foot reference is feet. A feet of hope. That's a good one.
F-E-A-T.
Well, yeah, you could use the sound of the word.
Every hope is a feat.
Play on words. Yeah, it is.
Well, okay, but you know what? Going back to
sure.
Rick's suggestion here, Hope 1-2, it's clever, you know, the W-O-N and the T-O-O, but what if we did the actual numbers? 1-2, because that's 12. But
oh,
we're not
man.
Saying 12. We're saying Hope 1-2.
You're spelling
you
out the
spell
number.
Spell it out, but it's actually
but
Hope
phonetically,
12.
It's... It's
Rick, I don't know if that's what you meant, but I like that one.
A variation.
Well, I like the others, too, but that one kind of resonates with me. All right, folks, give us your feedback on that, oth@2600.com. Our phone number, 347-335-0818, if you want to say something on the radio now. We have no phone calls, which means everybody must have tuned out as soon as we said we weren't taking phone calls. Go ahead, Rob.
I'm loving these ideas that are coming in, but also I should point out it doesn't necessarily have to deal with the number 12. You know, if you think of something devilishly clever that just stands on its own as something related to hope, send it in.
That's true.
We'd love to see it.
These are just guidelines, and usually there can be a number of different thematic elements to the conference title. So please, this is just a guideline, just a general reference based on how many of these events we've had.
Oh, we had a phone call, and now it went away. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Voltaire.
I was going to suggest Beyond the Next Hope.
Well, yeah, that's got a couple of attributes. Beyond the Next Hope and definitely not the Last Hope.
It's a conjunction of
several kinds.
Past conference names, so
all right.
That is a good use of previous
Let's ones. Take this phone call. Good evening. You're on the radio. Speak up, please. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. You're on.
Is this the show?
It's this, yes, if that's what you're calling, this is the show, and you are on the air right now.
Oh, I just want to say I've listened to the show for a long time. You're always very interesting. There used to be a guy named Mike on the show. Am I wrong? Was there a guy who used to be named Mike and he's not there anymore?
No, he still is named Mike, actually. And, yeah, we've had all kinds of people on the show. We used to have Isaac. We used to have Fiber.
Red Hack.
Red Hack, remember? Well, he was a guest. But we've had people come and go, and they come back. Yeah.
Okay, I got
your memory,
the point.
Your
That's
memory
it
is not
me.
Faulty.
Thank you very much.
Does that clear things up? All right.
Yep.
Thanks for that.
Some people, sometimes you need that.
If you want to check in and see if someone has been in these studios, well, not these studios. Those are old studios. But, yeah, we can verify that for you.
Yeah, we'll help with memory.
347-335-0818. You know, you could have checked that also by going into the archives and just looking at...
Yeah, we have show descriptions in our vast trove of recordings. There are great descriptions of each and every of these shows.
www.2600.com/offthehook is how you find them. And we have another caller. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey, my name's Brandon. I'm from Seattle, so we do 2600 up here. Yeah, I have a kind of a weird question, but
go ahead.
A while back, we moved the meeting away from the convention center.
We know what you did. You moved to a coffee shop that's very confusing to get to. You have to go through an alley and go up 3 flights of stairs. We know about this.
Yeah, we checked it out.
Okay. Yeah.
So you know about it.
We do know about it.
Oh, yeah.
Was,
did you think we wouldn't find out? No, we found out, and
checked.
It's a good meeting place. We've seen it.
Oh, so you do think that. So
yes.
Someone came in the chat room a while back and was like, hey, Emmanuel found out, and he for against it, and he's really bummed out. And like, what?
Wait,
really?
Wait.
Why?
Okay, who said that?
Yeah, who's spreading lies like this? Wow. If I were bummed out, believe me, everybody in Seattle would know if I were bummed out. I was not. I thought it was great. It was a challenge because it's on a street, right? The address of the cafe is, what's the street called?
Oh, I'm blanking on that.
It's on University Way.
University Way,
but it's up alleyway.
Yes,
but if you go into the address on University Way, it's you won't find it. You have to go around the back, but that's also called University Way. But
yeah.
Your question was simply if I was upset with the meeting place. Was that your question?
I just wondered if someone was trolling us or not.
Well, I think someone probably is, but you know. Even if we are upset with the meeting place, you have the right to meet wherever you want to meet.
Well, and the most important thing is, are you happy with the meeting place? And how is the meeting going there?
It's going great. It's growing.
That's
the thing with the convention centers, they started kicking us out of there, and they locked the bathrooms as soon as the meeting started.
That's
so,
not
like,
right.
No one could, so that's we had to bail out of there.
Now, if you have a good public space, and we're talking about 2,600 meetings or hacker meetings, they usually take place the first Friday of every month, except in Israel where it's the first Thursday of the month. Basically all around the world at the same time, hackers get together in a public space and just congregate. It's not really a meeting with an agenda. Some places have more of an agenda. It's a way to interface with the regular community of people that happen to be walking by. So many times our meetings have been at Citigroup, in Upper Manhattan, and they've moved to the atrium across the street as Citigroup is being reconstructed now. And we've met so many interesting people that didn't know what hackers were all about that stayed to talk with us for a few hours. And that's really the magic of it. And I hope that's what you guys are experiencing out in Seattle.
Yeah, it's a great place. They're super accommodating. And, you know, it's kind of hard to find. But we try to make it known, like, go upstairs, go on a thing, and the people know who are working there that it's up there. So
It's a good neighborhood, too. It's very lively.
Yeah, exactly. It's great to hear that it's growing and, maintain the rapport with the people there, and you should have many more successful meetings in the future.
Thanks for your call.
All right, thanks a lot.
And again, meetings take place first Friday of the month. Not this Friday coming up, but the one after that, right?
In 2 weeks.
Two weeks. We might have time for one more phone call. If you call quickly, 347-335-0818, while I try and find the outro theme. Here's a call. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm just calling to tell you that I want to thank you because you were hysterically funny when you were reading the horribly written article at the beginning of the show.
Well, thank you. Hey, I'm glad somebody got something out of that.
I was laughing my behind off, so I don't have any computer questions. I'm actually off the grid entirely.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's So what business do I have calling a computer show? It's very ironic because I'm completely off the grid and I have my little radio by my bed and I listen to you all the time, this show. I think it's very informative and interesting and entertaining. But I had to call in to thank you because I was really laughing. You did a great job with your comedy show.
Well, that means, I was serious, but I know it's funny.
No, I know.
But that means a lot, and I'm glad other people appreciate good grammar and good story writing. And hopefully we demand that kind of thing in the future. My only possible regret is that the person who wrote it might have heard it, and I don't mean to be too hard on them. But, it's if you're going to wind up in my Google News feed, I expect some level of quality, and I'm not going to back down from that. Yes, Rob?
Just a note, for anyone interested in our old pal Mike, he's on Twitter as Vermicelli, like the pasta.
Okay, great. And probably penning a letter saying, how dare you give out my Twitter ID on the air, but we'll see about that. All right, that's it for us this week. Write to us again, oth@2600.com. We'll be back next week for the spring fundraiser, and hopefully we'll have all kinds of fun, exciting things to do then and in the weeks ahead. We'll see you next time. Good night.